What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, Bill Spadia here. Welcome back to my podcast. In today's next episode of Speaking Recovery, we're talking with a man from Recovery Centers of America. His name is Rob Strauber, and he is an Associate Director of Intervention Services. Rob, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So, Rob, I've been talking to some of your colleagues, and we've been, for the last couple of months, trying to break down this crisis of addiction and overdose deaths that has gripped not only New Jersey, but really the entire country. And I know the work that you guys are doing at Recovery Centers of America really run the gamut from intervention to help with follow-up and sober living and all the and treatment and detox and everything. Your focus is intervention. So you're at the start of the crisis. So let's jump right back into it. Just explain to me what intervention services means from an RCA perspective.
Sure. Yeah, it's actually really unique in the fact that Recovery Centers of America offers intervention services, as most treatment centers do not. And so it really is an opportunity for families to be able to help their loved ones access help if they're not willing to go, through using the experience and the expertise of the interventionist to help that family system change the way that they are working with their loved one and their active addiction. So I like to say that interventions are part of Recovery Centers of America's continuum of care, which, as you said, really runs the gamut from intervention on through inpatient treatment, outpatient treatments, helping individuals access meaningful recovery.
So what point do you get involved? I mean, who typically makes the call for you to intervene?
So most of the time, somebody's calling into our mission center, which is 1-888-RECOVERY. Their loved ones may not be willing to go, or maybe they are at the time that they originally call, but maybe they back out from treatment. So families are typically the first caller. Could certainly be friends or colleagues, or we've worked with many businesses and law enforcement. But most of the time, we're dealing with families whose loved one is just not willing to get help. They're concerned for them, and they'll call into the back office and they'll share some information. They'll say, hey, you know, we've tried this, we've tried that. And then our treatment advocates at the Mission Center then will take that family through a series of questions so we can better understand their loved one. Once we have all of that information, understanding the background and what's happening, then one of our interventionists will reach out to that family system and then help bring together a group, right, of the most important people in that person's life, their family, their friends, like I said, colleagues, anybody who would be concerned for their loved one would come together on a pre-intervention where we would meet with them, talk through a plan. The goal is full family healing. So we want to make sure that we have everybody's observations heard, their concerns heard. We do some education. We want to make sure that family and that team is educated in what substance use disorder is.
Rob, let me ask you this, not to interrupt you, but how do you differentiate and how do you resolve conflict? So let's say it's a sister of a guy that is struggling. He's in his 20s. She's concerned. The parents are ignoring it, saying there's no problem. The folks at work don't even really know about it. How do you deal with that and not have a situation blow up? I'm just running through as you're saying it. That you got a guy that works with in a public space where he's got five or six colleagues that are close to him. Some know, others don't, or maybe they share the problem. And maybe the problem is, let's say it's booze and he's hiding it really well. Sister calls. All of a sudden now you've exposed this guy to colleagues. Where's the line? How do you figure that out?
Well, I would talk with the sister first and try to understand the dynamics of the situation. Who's important in that person's life? I would ask them, you know, why are you calling now? I think that's really important to understand why now. Oftentimes it's been a process to get to where they're at in their active addiction. So maybe there was a police event, or maybe there was a fall, or maybe the sister's just coming in tune with the fact that her brother has a problem. And so I would hear that family system, understand who's who, and then invite them to the call, right? We're not going to deal with the patient quite yet, but we want to be able to bring everybody to the table. So as you're saying, maybe the family, maybe the mom, the dad aren't willing to address the issue, but we can find the common thread, right? The love and the concern for that person, and say, okay, so as their other daughter, you know, can we get them to the table so we can get everybody's viewpoints put on the table? Mm-hmm. I'd much rather know that somebody's going to put, you know, some boundaries up or some obstacles in the way. We would educate them. We would ask them to say, okay, you know, from what your daughter's saying, do you actually see what's happening? If it's a no, it's a no, and that's okay. We're not trying to out the individual. We're just trying to bring together the most important people in their lives so we can have a meaningful conversation about their concerns.
So let me ask you this. Let's walk through that process. So let's say you've got the stakeholders. What are you talking? Maybe 4 to 10 people? Is there a max limit? Is there a minimum number? Or doesn't matter?
No, usually about 6 to 8 folks. If you go up and above 10, 12, it can be a little overwhelming. But
yeah,
I've done interventions with almost 50 people in the room.
And how does the intervention work? Just so, I mean, what I want to help people understand is if you are calling, if you get the call, Rob, and people call 888 recovery and they say, my brother needs help, my son or daughter needs help, that it's not, you're not all of a sudden bringing the entire weight of the world on them. It's more of a positive. It's not a shouting session where they're belittled and berated. Walk me through that. Person shows up. Is it like a surprise party just in reverse?
Well, it depends, right? So I'm an invitational interventionist. I can do both, right? So a surprise intervention, I would say, is probably the majority of what we're working with. You know, the litmus test is if they would know, would they come? You know, so if somebody has lived life experience, it may behoove us to invite them to have that conversation. But no, you're right. I don't want to overwhelm the person calling in. So there is a bit of a process. When they would call 1-888 recovery, there would be a screening of sorts. We would gather a lot of information about their loved ones from that family's perspective. So we have a better understanding of what the situation is and what has led them to there. I or my staff would call that person and really just start to tease apart that family unit and say, okay, it's going to be really important that we get all of the voices, as you said, stakeholders together so that we can share all of our observations. And it's amazing, you know, oftentimes where maybe some folks may not have seen it or don't think it's as bad. Really, when they come to the table and start to hear other people's experiences, say, yeah, you know what? I've seen that too. or yeah, you know what, that makes sense. And I didn't really think of it along that way and just thought he was like a heavy drinker, but had no idea that he had just gotten a DUI or what have you. So, you know, oftentimes people with active substance use disorder will try to keep everyone in their own silos, right? They'll be isolated. They'll tell one person one thing, but another person another, because there's a lot of blame. There's a lot of shame. There's tons of guilt that's associated with this. So really the whole goal is to get everybody on the same page, speaking that same language, having a mantra of love and concern, right? We're back blogging on that. So that we're not going to just jump on the individual, start calling them names. When we have the entire team together, we'll talk through a letter writing process. This ends up becoming their script. And so that script is really important because interventions can be.
Who's writing the letters? The loved ones and friends?
Loved ones. Yep.
And they're writing a letter in the intervention. That's, you're talking through what they would want to say to them in a letter.
Yeah, during the intervention. Yep. We would talk through what that letter writing process is. We would have them do some homework. They would send the letters to us. We would review the content, making sure that we're looking for buzzwords, not necessarily what, you know, the message is, as much as, are we going to put that person on the defensive? You know, I'm looking for meaningful conversation, where most of the time when we're dealing with family systems, that's fractured and we haven't been able to get everybody to the table. So yes, in some regards, I want accountability and I want transparency, so that the family can start their path to recovery. So when we start to talk through what that starts to look like, oftentimes families are like, well, just come and fix this problem. You're the interventionist, right? You know how to sweet talk my loved one into treatment. And it's can't be further than the truth, right? I'm giving, and our team is giving them the tools to be able to share what they need to share so that they can be the driving force behind it. It's interesting to note that it takes five professionals to equal the voice of one family member. So the quicker I can get all those stakeholders to the table and share their love and concern, then we're going to have a strength in numbers type of approach. And we're going to be able to break through all of the objections and anything ugly that might come from that intervention. If the individual is upset or what have you, it becomes apparent very quickly why everybody's there. You know, they want to see their loved one get help.
Is the goal to get them into a detox from the intervention, or is it to put a pause and bring everyone together, or does it depend on the person?
So you're going to have a pretty narrow window of opportunity. And so when we do an intervention, we are almost putting all of our eggs in that basket at that time. So yes, we want that individual to go to treatment. It doesn't necessarily have to be detox. It depends on what that individual is going to qualify for. We're not assessors in the field, although we're highly trained. So it's not going to be our call as to what level of care they're going to qualify for. And it's not the family's, so be it. You know, if that individual doesn't meet criteria for inpatient level of care, then we're doing an outpatient level of care intervention.
And what would that be? Level of amount that they're consuming, whether they're, would it mean the type of substance or the amount?
Yeah. So it would be both, right? So both end. So if we're dealing with somebody who has alcohol use disorder and is drinking daily, I can tell you that assessment's going to come back and say, hey, you're going to need a detox level of care. Because if you were to stop abruptly, there could be adverse health issues. But if we're dealing maybe with somebody who has cocaine use disorder, and maybe is on the weekends utilizing it, but on another level, you know, is able to maintain their daily living, they may not meet criteria for an inpatient level of care.
Got it. Yeah. So what's the worst you've seen? I mean, from an intervention standpoint, what's the worst thing that has happened or potentially could happen at that?
Unfortunately, the worst thing that can happen is when the intervention doesn't take place and the individual doesn't make it. Okay. I've been doing this work for a long time. I've conducted thousands of interventions at this point, and that's happened on a handful of occasions. And it's awful. We try
meaning
to.
The person just does not show up.
No, as in they pass away.
Oh, I'm okay. Yeah. That's horrible. That's the worst thing.
That's the worst, obviously, right? That's everybody's fear. You know, what we would typically see, I try to schedule our interventions where they're going to be advantageous for us. We don't want to schedule an intervention when we know the individual has been up for days, maybe using methamphetamines, and come walking in while they're in the middle of their usage. You want to play your timing right. But I've seen everything you can think of. I've seen people walk out the door. I've seen, you know, we've had to call EMS services for individuals trying to commit harm to themselves. Yeah. I've seen individuals who have just gone and gotten into fist fights.
Do you alert the police before you do these interventions? Let them know you're
necessarily coming? If we know the individual we're working with has had a history of violence, then yes, I will recommend that to families and just say, hey, you know, we need to use best judgment and make sure that safety is paramount here. If I don't have a big team, and maybe let's say a spouse has been battered or something like that, yes, I will go in with a local sheriff. We'll make those phone calls and just explain, hey, you know, we just need some assistance.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you, if you had to judge this and just rate it, perhaps, let's say that, you said you've done thousands. Would you say most end up with the person saying, okay, thank you, I'm appreciative of this and I'm going to get help?
Yep.
Or do most end up neutral? Where's the line?
So it's tough to, as a person in recovery, I've met many more thousands of people throughout the journey, and it tends to be pretty, as substance use disorder, it's pretty predictable. Most people know they have a problem, right? So most people are not in the pre-contemplative stage, or they are, and they can be quickly moved into the contemplative stage. To be able to say, yeah, you know what, I have a problem. Maybe I'll start to take a look into some of these things. The mass majority of people will go. We have about a 95% success rate with individuals going to treatment within 2 weeks. And so the folks that go.
That's outstanding. That was what I was looking for. So for the folks listening that have someone in their family who has a problem, this is a fantastic first step. And it seems that the outlier is when it goes awry and goes south.
And we pre-plan for that, right? So we talk through what their loved one's objections are going to be. We get to empower the family system to be able to address those needs pretty quickly, right? So the best interventions I do, I say very little. I'll come in, I'll introduce myself to the person of concern. And then I get the family to read their letters. We'll deal with all the objections. We've already worked through it with what the family is going to say. If it's financials, you know, maybe the family's there to be able to help pick up some of the pieces, or if there's pets or things that need to be looked after. So that way we can whittle this down to a decision. Ultimately, what we're looking for is, yes, I'll go. I'm addressing your concerns. I agree that there's a problem and, you know, I'm willing to do it. That's ideal. And those that may not see that may go just because the pressure that they feel from their families, and maybe the light bulb turns on when they get into treatment. I oftentimes will explain to families that this is a process. It's been a process to get to where they're at with their loved one's active substance use disorder. We're asking that loved one to get into the process of recovery, right? So that doesn't just happen overnight. We're not just struck with sobriety and then know all of the things that we need to be able to do to live a happy life, right? Joyous and free. And then so I tell people this, I'd be remiss to tell you that this isn't a process in itself. you know, and so we're always looking towards the goal of getting everybody into their own recovery, families into theirs, their loved ones into theirs. Yep.
And this process, once someone calls you, it's about 2 weeks before you can get the person in with the letter writing and right. Is that about standard or it depends? Yeah.
So I measure our success when the intervention takes place. It can take place not usually the same day because we do need to bring everybody together. And usually you're dealing with people's schedules. But within a couple of days, sometimes it's just it's unavoidable, but it could take a week or so. So let's say the intervention took place today, Bill, and the individual said, no, I'm not going to go into treatment. We're going to we'll start the clock with them at that point. The intervention's taken place. They said, no, we've worked through boundaries with the family. The families are holding that boundary. Their loved ones will be in treatment 95% of the time within 2 weeks from the date of the intervention.
And what's a boundary? We're not going to see you until you get help. We're not going to encourage this. No, we're not going to meet you at the bar. What's a boundary?
So they all could be. And I don't tell families what their boundaries need to be. We'll give them a worksheet. We'll talk through what that looks like. Ultimately, when we get to that component, it has to be now a decision. How have I supported my loved one's addiction to this point versus how have I supported their recovery? And so the mantra has to shift. It's always about the love and the concern, but now we have to tell that individual, we're no longer supporting your active substance use. We are only going to support your recovery efforts. And that's going to look different for every family member. And so just to be clear, there is no requirement that you have to say certain things. In fact, I tell families, listen, if you don't mean it, don't say it, right? We want to be able to hold true and have you respect yourself because that's what these boundaries are for. They're not meant to be punitive. We're not trying to punish your loved one for being ill, right? We're dealing with a chronic progressive primary brain disease that is treatable, right? So we're not going to punish them for the help that they need, but we need to protect ourselves should they decide not to.
Okay, so let me last question, Rob. You've got a personal connection to this. What was your journey like? How long are you into it? How did you get here?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm a person in long-term recovery. I stumbled into recovery. My marriage wasn't working out. I had a young child. And then I wanted my wife and my life back. And I got neither one of those in the way that I thought was going to happen. Ended up going to treatment. And I was in outpatient after inpatient. And they kept asking me if I had gotten a sponsor, if I was going to these meetings. And they said, well, you're not really progressing until you get to that point. I was getting a lot of great support in those in the outpatient. But then I was then able to shift over into a mutual aid support group where I was able to find a mentor who started walking me through a different way of living. And then once I was able to do that, he said, all right, put your hand out and go help somebody else. And so when I did that, that was the first time I think, Bill, in my life that I had felt like, hey, I'm out of myself, right? I'm actually helping somebody else. And so I was a country club manager and took a huge leap of faith. I went into this field and started taking some classes. I met who was to become the co-founder of RCA at that point, and Jay Utes, he's unfortunately passed on now. And we've been able to build this program to be able to help individuals at no cost, right? So the only litmus test is that, you know, if you're looking for your loved one to go to RCA and they're not willing to go, we will perform that intervention. So
how many years was that?
So I'm 14 years sober.
Wow.
And I've been in, and I've been in the field. This is my ninth year.
Wow. And was there a reconciliation with your wife? Is she back in your life and your child?
No, so my ex-wife is still my ex-wife. She's a wonderful human being. My oldest son now is 18, so he's too cool for school. But, you know, he's doing great too. And then I ended up getting remarried, two beautiful daughters. Now they're 18 and 16. I just can't believe that they're this old now. And we have ours at 10. So getting that, my life back, I got back in ways I could have never imagined. But yeah, I mean, it's been incredible. What an opportunity, you know, this is really like an art, right? And so RCA said, you know, here's this canvas that we want to be able to help families that, you know, otherwise are too high up the tree. And so if we're trying to stay true to our mission of keeping recovery accessible and affordable, outside of, you know, bringing in a external interventionist at a price tag of anywhere between $2,000 to $10,000, we're able to do that. So all of my staff are working towards their credentials. Pennsylvania happens to be the only state that recognizes intervention as a profession. Hmm. And so they actually have the only requirements for an interventionist that can be recognized by the trade groups. So, so all of our staff works towards their certified intervention professional. All of our staff in this area actually have them. The only two staff members out in the Midwest are the ones that are working towards it. So they've all been in the industry for 2 years plus. They've all been through their paces. They all get to go through me, you know, to observe all of their interventions and make sure that they're on the right path. They all are certified in their own modalities as well. So when you get an interventionist from RCA, they have been through the gold standard of training. This is not a 3-day course, right? Where they can come out and say, yeah, I know how to do interventions now. And you know, we're really strong on family systems and motivational interviewing and making sure that we're really working with that family to keep that momentum moving.
Wow. Inspiring. Rob, thank you. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank everybody at RCA. If you have trouble, if you are struggling, or if your loved one, your friend, someone in your group is struggling, please call right now, 888-RECOVERY, or go online to recoverycentersofamerica.com. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate your time today. Be well, and we'll be sharing this story with as many as we can.
Thanks so much, Bill. Have a great day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.